Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to be with you. Kevin went out, bought 8 Sharpies today, so he can personally sign autographs tonight at our personal appearance. Fabulous.
And you know what? When we're done, I'll have all of the ink in all 8 pens. That's the great part. I could use them over again.
America loves you. All right. Tom Brady went into court today. And look, there will be no winner. Roger Goodell will not win in this. Tom Brady will not win in this. There's just no winner in this thing. They just need a resolution. And I guess according to Chris Mortensen, I don't know if you want to keep Mort on this story or not.
That's a good question.
they wanted Brady, evidently, according to the report, to at least recognize the validity of the Wells report. Well, he won't do it. And again, I go back to this. I wouldn't either. I'm going to say, you know what? I believe the findings of a woulda, coulda, shoulda report. What?
Here, you'll like this, Steve. This just came out as the kind of a transcript. Judge Berman, what is the evidence of a scheme or a conspiracy? NFL's attorney Nash, there is clear evidence in the text that Brady knew. Berman, on January 18th, Nash, no, not for that specific game. Berman, that's the only game we're talking about. The Wells report relates to only one game. Whether it happened before, who knows? There's no finding in this case that there was anything done by Mr. Brady in that game.
Wait, again, this...
No, on January 18th? No, not for that specific game. But that's the one we're talking about.
That's the only game we're talking about here.
I knew you'd like that one.
Well, no, but I have no interest in this one way or the other.
I only have interest in one game.
Yeah, I understand that, but I understand that, but there's something wrong here, and I think there's something wrong on both sides, but. Let's start with this. It doesn't rise to the level of a 4-game suspension. Let's at least at minimum start with this. That's the big issue. It doesn't rise to that level. I don't even think it rises to the level of a suspension.
No, I agree with you. I don't think there is enough. There is circumstantial evidence that something was amiss. Whether Brady was involved in it, knew about it, orchestrated it, I don't think there's enough proof there.
Well, then that's the problem. If you're going to do this to somebody's reputation, you got to have proof. When John Dowd did the Pete Rose report, okay, known as the Dowd report, he had phone records, he had betting slips. He says that when he put it all on the table for Rose to look at, he said Rose turned green. Right, that's what happens when you've got proof. And again, if we were to go around, you know, we're going to be in Northumberland tonight. If we ask for a show of hands tonight from people, do you think Brady had a hand in this? I'd be shocked if there was anybody who didn't put their hand up. But there's a big difference between thinking it, your gut telling you, and then proving it. And I read that thing. I have learned it's very important to read independent reports. And it's not...
Here's another interesting exchange. The attorney, Daniel Nash. Maybe the most direct is Brady neither agreed neither McNally nor Jastrzemski would have deflated the balls without his direction. Judge Berman, is that it? Nash, a little bit later on, says, is there a text or an email in which Mr. Brady directs them to deflate the balls? No. Just because there may not be a smoking gun doesn't mean there's not not evidence of culpability. Now, that's the one that got me. Just because there's no smoking gun doesn't mean it's not possible. Well, just because we haven't seen life on Mars doesn't mean there isn't life on Mars. I just don't get that. That does not make any... This is a very silly, silly case that the NFL is trying to put together. And I almost feel bad for Daniel Nash, the attorney, to have to go to court with this in such a high-profile manner, because he's just going to get ripped apart because of this.
Well, he's just doing his job.
Well, I know that, and that's what I mean. The poor guy's just doing his job and getting a lot of money to do it, no question, but...
He did not make the ruling. The commissioner made the ruling. Again, Tom Brady, even say, for example, the judge wipes out the suspension. Tom Brady does not win in this. He doesn't. There are always going to look at him with a heavy level of scrutiny and think that he cheated. So he's not going to win. He'll temporarily win, but he won't win. Roger Goodell, if the judge upholds the four-game suspension, he still doesn't win. Okay, this has been, to their credit, about as poorly handled as you can possibly handle something that is minor. Okay, it's minor. Okay, a little bit. I mean, do you know what the fine is for deflating or overinflating a football?
$10,000 per instance.
$25,000.
I don't far.
$25,000. Okay. This is jaywalking.
Well, look at this from go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
A four-game suspension is throwing grenades at sections of the stadium. Okay. Okay. This is jaywalking. Okay.
Let's look at this from Brady's perspective. I mean, when you're looking at the evidence that the NFL has against you, and you're in a discussion on how to plead this case out, let's say, or plea it out. Are you about to do that? No. Why would you want to admit guilt even if you did do it, knowing the NFL had no hard evidence? I don't blame Brady for saying, hey, listen, I had nothing to do with this. I don't know what you're talking about. If you can show me where I did, you know, I don't blame him for not trying to lessen the suspension with some sort of an agreement between him and the NFL, because then he has to admit that he did it.
Well, Mike Ditka said he should fight him tooth and nail if he thinks he's innocent. He should never give in. I agree with that. The problem Roger Goodell has, and it all goes back to how he handled the Ray Rice thing. And the fact that that was handled in such a way, we sit back and go, what? What are you doing? Then you do this. Say, I'm tough. Tough on what? Tough on the inflation of the ball? I don't know. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The record was broken. Sunbury Motors broke their 100-year July sales record.
And we'll do it again in August.
Do it again in August.
SMC will sell over 83 new Fords by August 30th.
SMC is where you want to be if you want a new Escape for $21,740. SMC is where you want to be if you want a new Focus for $16,860. SMC is where you want to be if you want a new F-150 4x4 for under $30,000.
Sunbury Motors isn't taking this record lightly.
If you're in the market for a new vehicle, you owe it to yourself to get to Sunbury Motors before September 1st. If you want 0% for 72 months on a Focus, Fiesta, Explorer, or Expedition,
SMC is where you want to be.
Sunbury Motors will sell over 83 new Fords by August 30th. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. SMC is where you need to be
to save more money on your next new Ford.
Have any of you ever seen the Kevin video to this music?
And never will.
Wild, man. It's wild. Oh. Tomorrow, Adam Rittenberg of ESPN.com, Guy Cipriano, Golf Magazine, will join us on the PGA Championship. We'll talk to Adam about the Big Ten. And also... today we'll have Tony Knopp, CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. He will join us.
I'll check out for that segment.
4:06 today. What's wrong with Tony? I don't understand what's wrong with Tony.
No. I like Tony. I like Tony a lot, but he tells me that the sports that I like, nobody else does.
I tell you that.
Yeah, but I don't listen to you.
Okay.
Tony backs it up with stats.
What do you think I use?
I don't know. You have as much evidence on that as the NFL does on deflating balls.
No, I pretty much.
It's all circumstantial.
I know what the ratings are. I know what the ratings are. Your sport's getting a little more popular. Very, very quickly, I know we're going to have Paul Page and Sage Karam on next week. One quick item on that. IndyCar should be gaining as a race on NASCAR because there's action on the track. In other words, they pass on the track. I think if you chart NASCAR right now, the vast majority of passing happens in the pits. And that's just not... I don't know.
Well, the Iowa race was just unreal.
That's not great racing. Have the passing be in the pits. So,
let's see. The IndyCar Iowa race had something like 80 lead changes in it, or something like that. It was just unreal. The and
right.
Multiple lanes where the drivers could actually go flat out and go four wide at times. Drivers are scared to death about it, and we're complaining about it. But from a fan, from a race fan standpoint, and even people that didn't ever watch IndyCar racing, I've talked to a few of them and said, "Hey, you know what? I understand why you like it now. There was some great racing there."
Right. I'm just saying it's quick, and there's a lot of things going on with it that are, you know, it's exciting to watch. NASCAR, it's close, it's bumper to bumper, but there's too many. The passing occurs in the pits. For example, Danica Patrick ran up on someone and couldn't get past them because, and she even complained on the radio by says, "Look, I get to them, and once I get to them, I can't go around them," and that's because of whatever restrictions they have in the car. It's killing their performance. I don't know the reasons for the restrictions, but I mean, IndyCar is better racing right now because they're wide open, free flowing, and there's flow to the race. NASCAR is not doing that. And even though it's still more popular TV ratings-wise, it just isn't. Well, that's, you know.
Here it is. It was the Fontana race. 80 lead changes.
There's always American Pharoah. American Pharoah is the best racer in the country.
The 80-plus lead changes in that race.
Unfortunately for IndyCar, here's the big problem. From people nobody even knows, nobody knows who they are.
And that is a big problem, yeah.
They have very little name recognition. That is a killer. NASCAR probably is not better racing, but they have better name recognition.
Well, the guy that's leading the points right now is Juan Pablo Montoya, who most people know from NASCAR, even though he was an IndyCar driver before that. And Graham Rahal probably is known just by his last name and his father, Bobby Rahal. And he's the number two guy right now. But that's why the sport is really leaning on guys like Sage Karam, for instance, who's a United States driver, and they're becoming less and less of those, less American drivers in the sport.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out because he does not inspire a lot of confidence among other drivers at this moment.
No, he is not a very popular guy among his peers. There's no question about that.
And the reason being is that's youth. That's youth. Guy Cipriano, Adam Rittenberg tomorrow. And coming up on Friday, Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. We'll talk about how dome kickers succeed at Heinz Field.
Well, they better hope that's the case.
Yeah. You'd hope so. But,
83% success rate.
Yes, with perfect conditions. I mean, the only thing he had to worry about at times was whether the air conditioning system was blowing in a certain direction.
And exactly my point, Stephen. Exactly my point.
We'll see. He may go out and be the MVP of the league, and you're saying, I knew they should have signed him.
And you know what? I will happily...
You and Sean Carey will be wearing his jersey. It'll be a lot of fun for all of us. You guys are out there wearing his jersey.
I will happily eat my words. And by the way, the story about what happened to Swiezum, as it appears it happened on the second half kickoff, there was... The turf at Benson Stadium is about 11 years old, and it appears as though he lost his footing while he ran down the field under his kickoff, and that's what caused the injury.
I didn't get any email from you today on topics. What is this? Normally you're sending me emails on topics.
Sorry, it was a busy day.
Doing what?
Trying to find a kicker who's kicked outside successfully.
Okay. David Trout not available? There's a name from the past.
Bring back Matt Barr.
Believe me, Matt Barr could still kick.
I don't doubt it.
He could still kick, believe me.
How about David Akers?
So could Chris. Chris could still kick. Tony Knopf coming up to ruin Kevin's image of sports.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin's driving a Tucson this week.
Yeah, we're driving a Hyundai Tucson from Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. Leather interior, very comfortable seats in the front, wrap right around you nicely. Heated seats, too, so when it gets a little colder, especially when you're going to use the all-wheel drive in the winter. You'll be nice and toasty. Plus, there's vents in the back seat for quicker air transfer to those that need it in the back, whether it be air conditioning or warmer air, as I said, in the wintertime. Plus, you'll see a backup camera available, as well as a lot of other great features, including plenty of room in the back to store whatever it is, from groceries to luggage to even some fun recreational things. And with the luggage rack on the top, you can put a lot of things on top, too, including maybe boats. Well, not a boat, but a kayak or canoe. Check it out. It's the Tucson with America's best warranty from Sunbury Motors Hyundai, and that's in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury.
Very nice. All right. 800-795-9565. Tony Knopf, CEO, Spotlight Ticket Management, next half hour. And Adam Bittner, Pittsburgh Press Post Gazette, also be joining us in the final half hour of the show today. We're looking forward to that. What is it about Tony Knopf? I know personally you like him a lot, but what is it that Tony has done to ruin your image of sports?
Well, he reminds me that there's money involved in it, and that's what ruins sports.
And there is lots of money in it. Lots and lots of money. Look, let's just take Penn State. Here's Penn State sitting in State College, Pennsylvania, 200 miles or so from Philadelphia, about 125 to 135 miles from Pittsburgh, 90 miles from Harrisburg, about 140 from Scranton. Yet, in this area where the town population is about 36,000, the area population is about 125, you have a 107,000-seat stadium. You also have, in the middle of this, a $115 million sports operation that goes on here. And the idea is to grow this operation at some point, because there are going to be needs that have to be met over the next 5 years, to probably a $150 million business. And it is a business. And one of the keys that makes Penn State a business model worthy of looking at is the fact that it is autonomous. They do not take any money at all from the university at large. They do not take state money. They have to be self-sustaining. Well, they're self-sustaining with 31 sports. That's big business. How do you achieve that goal? You achieve the goal through ticket sales. You achieve the goal through fundraising. You achieve that goal through ticket sales from other sports. You know, you achieve the goal through a radio network contract. You achieve the goal through your national TV contract through your conference. You achieve that goal through bowl revenue sharing. You achieve the goal through television revenue sharing. And also conference championship game revenue sharing. And you achieve it through your corporate partners. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you have to achieve it to get to a number that then pays for 800 to 900 plus scholarships, pay for their room, pay for their board, also pay for the salaries of the coaches, trainers, personnel, maintenance people that all work in your operation. In the middle of Pennsylvania, 200 miles from Philadelphia and 125 to 135 miles from Pittsburgh, sits a small town with a $115 million business operation that in 5 years will probably be $150 million. How do you do that? And also, how do you maintain those numbers? The TV numbers will be there. The radio network numbers will be there. Now you have to make sure your corporate partners are there. You also have to make sure, I mean, there's certain parts that are there. The TV numbers will be there because the conference will negotiate the contract for you. The bowl money will be there because the conference will negotiate the bowl contracts for you. The radio network you have to do yourself. I mean, that's your baby. That's you know, whatever you get from it is from your negotiation. Your corporate partners and then your tickets. And when you have an operation that big, how do you get there, and how do you maintain it? How do you keep interest in getting people into the stadium? Number one, the product has to be really good. You can market all you want, but if you're not winning, marketing is not your issue. If you are winning and you have a great product on the field or the court, and you don't have people going to it, then you do have a marketing problem. But usually the two go hand in hand. The greatest marketing tool is winning. All right. Now, we're also in this era, and I've talked about this before, where you have HD TV. What do you have, a 100-inch plasma?
No, it's 48, I believe.
Hmm. Right. You were bragging to Sean Kerry it was 100, but that was some sort of fish story.
A little bit of a fish story, yeah. That would take up half my room.
But it's HD, and people have HD TVs. The clarity is unbelievable. I think the sport has probably helped more than any others, probably hockey. You can see the puck now. But you have HD TVs. How do you counter that in the stadium? You counter that in the stadium. They put $10 million into HD boards. You have to do that. You have to. There's no choice in today's world of sports. You just can't go in there. You have to be able to provide them with all the things that you have at home, along with the ambiance and the thrill of being there. That's where the winning part comes in. And people want to be associated with something that's a winner. People want to be associated with something that's positive, something good, something they can get excited about, something they can brag about. And that's what you have to do with your product in the field. There's a lot of pressure on James Franklin to do that, like there was pressure on Joe Paterno to do that. There was pressure on Bill O'Brien to do that. Right. Well, that's the pressure Patrick Chambers faces, and that's what you have to do. You have to be able to face that pressure, and it's more than just internal pressure. When you're the revenue-producing sports, there's more pressure on you because you also have the added burden of drawing people in to watch your product because it benefits all the other products on campus. So you have to be able in this climate to keep people interested. How do you get young people involved? That's why I was talking about DraftKings the other day. DraftKings appeals to 21 to 35-year-olds. Those are the people you're trying to get into the stadium. Those are the people you're trying to get into the arena. Because the idea is that once you get them hooked into the sport and enjoying it and wanting to go, and then wanting to go more, when they get to be 40 and 50 years old, they're your season ticket holders. And that's why you have to build that base. That's why I brought up and did so much on DraftKings the other day. A lure for young people, and DraftKings appeals mostly to 21 to 35-year-olds at this stage. That may expand as time goes, but right now it's 21 to 35-year-olds. And they're having success with that group. That's the group you want to get interested in your sport. Now, college football doesn't have that. College basketball doesn't have that. They don't have DraftKings for college games. They don't have fantasy for college games. They don't even have EA Sports anymore for college games. But what you do have is that you automatically have the student body involved. Penn State has sold 21 to 22,000 season tickets to students this year. And in doing so, you automatically have a young fan base taking up about 20% of your stadium. Beautiful. The idea is that then once they graduate and they're 23, 24, 25, 26, and 27-year-olds, that they still want to come to the stadium because it's an exciting place to be on the weekend, whether it's the game, whether it's the parking lot, tailgates, the excitement of being with their friends, the excitement of being around the event, whatever it takes to get them there, that's what you do. So the colleges have that built in where they already have a built-in 18 to 22-year-old audience that the pros don't have. That's why DraftKings, FanDuel, Fantasy works because it gets them involved in following the game far more closely than they would have without it. And that's all part of the marketing. That's why you see pro sports teams and pro sports leagues endorsing and getting involved in throwing money into fantasy leagues, DraftKings, and FanDuel. That's why I brought it up the other day. It's a major marketing point moving forward for them because this has been the one consistent way they can reach young people. But you've got to get them to make that extra step. I've talked about this before, and there's going to be some big decisions are going to be made about Beaver Stadium, one way or the other. Beaver Stadium is a 55-year-old facility. So what do you do with it? Right now, the maintenance on it, it's a little bit more than $2 million a year. So what do you do about renovating it? What do you do about changing it just a bit? Do you keep it the same? Do you build an entire new facility? New facilities in this country, the NFL understands this. And this one here, you know, keep this. I've talked about this before. Stadiums are probably going to have to be moving forward in the, and we'll take it from the pros' point of view, smaller. We're going to have to be smaller. You notice in baseball, ballparks have become smaller. Fenway Park and Wrigley Field used to be the outliers on size as ballparks. Now, other ballparks have come back to them. PNC Park seats 38,000. Citizens Bank Park, what, about 43,000? Now, Camden Yards is in the 40s. Progressive Field is in the 40s. AT&T Park is in the 40s. You know, Kauffman Stadium, Busch, they're all in the 40s. As I mentioned, PNC Park, you know, the capacity of PNC Park is 38,000. But boy, it's great for them to now sit back and say, hey, we've had 20 sellouts this year, which they have. They've had 20 sellouts. And that's the trend in ballparks. You're going to see that trend in stadiums. You don't want, you would think years ago, about 15, 20 years ago, you would have thought the NFL, hey, build a 100,000-seat stadium. They will show up. The NFL's that popular. It's the reverse. You need to get stadiums in the 55 to 65,000 seat range, have luxury suites, have HD boards, have great internet access, you know, have great wireless access for your phone so people can follow what's going on. You have to do all of those things, and you also have to make sure your seats bring with it a value to it of being at a premium. So now what do you do in college? There was an arms race in college where everybody got involved in this. Michigan went to 111,000. Penn State went to 107. Ohio State went to 105. Texas went to 100. Alabama went to 101. Kyle Field at Texas A&M just went to 102. Tennessee's at 104. They bumped Nebraska up into the 90s. Georgia's bumped up to 80,000 now. Camp Randall's at 80,000 at Madison. The Swamp got built up to 75 to 80,000. And that's the trend that you saw in this arms race to have the biggest stadiums in the country. Beaver Stadium is number two. But now it's 2015. Michigan wasn't selling out games last year. Michigan wasn't selling out games. Ohio State was. Tennessee's not. Tennessee averaged 88,000 fans a game last year in a 104,000-seat stadium. Now, 88,000 is nothing to sneeze at. That's extremely impressive. But I'm pointing out the 16,000 empty seats per game. The no-show rate for a Georgia college student that has tickets to see Georgia football, 29%. So, I mean, there are issues. There are issues that you have to deal with that are very important issues moving forward. They're going to have to take a long, hard look at. So what do you do? Maintain the stadium the way it is? Viable possibility. Renovate the stadium? Viable possibility. Or you say, you know what, I got a 55-year-old building that's going to be 60 years old in 5 years. Do I build a new one? It's a fair question to put out there to discuss. And if you were to build a new one, how large would the building be? And when Penn State was expanding Beaver Stadium from 46,000 to 60,000 to 78,000 to 84,000 to 96,000 and then finally to 107, 108, the expansions were met with ticket holders. Now you've got a huge capacity stadium. A lot of things, unfortunately, too many things tanked in 2008, in September of 2008, and the economy got hit hard. So the timing wasn't great. But what do you do moving forward? It's interesting. Texas A&M just took Kyle Field to 102,000, I want to say. It's impressive. But I'm wondering if you're going to see stadium expansions across the board, or if you're going to see some people, you know, saying, you know what, we'll either settle where we are or we'll downsize a bit. Downsizing has been happening in professional sports for a while. Why do you think they created all those tarps that you see at Oakland Coliseum? And moving forward, television does a great job of, you know, picture, sound, and the top announcers do a great job. Lower level you go, they don't, but you still get pictures. And television wants you there. And it's up to sports entities to figure out how to get you there. That's why we have Tony on to talk about all these various elements. You know, and I know Kevin has a passion for the Olympics. And I've talked about, look, they should build one site and just maintain it. This stuff's too expensive now. It's too expensive. And, you know, you go to a place like Rio de Janeiro, and you get to swim in sludge. Fabulous. I don't think they have an EPA down there, do they?
Would it be the Rio Department of... No, I'm trying to think of what the acronym would be.
The Sanitation Department.
I don't think they have one of those from what I've heard and what I've read.
Mm-hmm.
I've also talked to a few people that have been to Rio, and they said, definitely, if you go, stay in the area of the Olympics. Don't go anywhere else.
Well, okay then.
Makes me feel warm and fuzzy, doesn't it?
Tony Knott, next half hour. And Adam Bittner from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and Pittsburgh Press in the final half hour. Great to have you on board today. Adam Rittenberg tomorrow, ESPN.com and the Big Ten. And also tomorrow, Guy Cipriano on the Big Ten, on the PGA Championship. Coming up on Friday, Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Top of the hour news, and then Tony Knopp to ruin Kevin's day. We'll talk money, business, next.